Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Literary Showcase. This show is designed with authors in mind. The featured guests are authors who want to showcase a recent literary work or provide advice to enhance your literary career. That's the technical side. Occasionally, we also have fun. This show is hosted by the master communicator. Add her charm and wit and a dynamic guest to the equation, and you'll have the ingredients for a great show. So pull out your pens and get ready, because here's Sharon.
Hello, everyone. I am so excited. We made it to 2013. We made it through 2013. I cannot believe it. Wow. A whole year. Wow, man, I tell you, what a year. And what I'd like to do is just say Happy New Year and God's blessings to all of my listeners. I have a dynamite show on today. You are listening to The Master Communicator, and this is The Literary Showcase. And I want to say I'm just totally blown away by the quality of the authors that I have on the show today. And I have my pen and paper out because I expect to learn something. Yes, the Master Communicator expects to learn a lot today. Our first guest is Sean XL or Extra Large Mitchell. He is the ultimate hip-hop griot. He began his career promoting platinum hit makers from Rockmaster Scott in the Dynamic Three to MC Hammer. As an artist, Sean is the first rapper to win a national music competition. He is the author of the book Hip Hop Hooray, celebrating 30 years of rap music, and serves as the national director of Hip Hop for A-plus Kids Music and Art School. He is an activist, and he has recently released his new e-book, Introduction to KMOT, a new spiritual practice for African Americans and people of African descent, The Gift of Mind Power. Welcome, Sean. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for the introduction. Yeah,
Everything is going good. Second time at the mic together. I know, if I remember correctly,
yes.
We had a great time last time.
Yes, we did. Glad to be back on the show as well.
So what's going on in your world, Sean? What's going on in your world with this new book?
Well, coming from a hip-hop perspective, you know, you kind of, I've grown over the years, especially, you know, when I say hip-hop, you know, I'm reflecting back on the era of Public Enemy, KRS-One, Kumo D, Conscious Hip-Hop, X-Clan, all the groups and artists that were making conscious records back in the day. and which really influenced me at the time as a hip hop artist, incorporating messages in the music to try to reach the young people and teach and educate the young people and try to raise their consciousness and try to make an attempt to make a positive change for the listeners, for the young people listening to the music.
So what motivated you to create a spiritual practice for African Americans?
Well, coming into consciousness from that era, one of the things that you began to do, one of the things that I started doing was reading a lot. I started with the autobiography of Malcolm X and continued reading Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, Malana Karenga, a lot of scholars, a lot of African-American scholars, and I started reading their works. And it occurred to me that when you talk about the African-American community, we have a unique experience based on our history of enslavement. One of the things that happened during our enslavement is that our culture was taken away from our ancestors. So when you talk about culture, what I'm referring to in a general sense is language, education, religion, names, customs, all of those different aspects of the African culture was taken away during enslavement. And so one of the contributing factors to the problems that we face today as far as black-on-black crime, the lack of education, prison, incarceration, lack of jobs, the economic situation that a lot of our people are in, a lot of the current problems that we have, the health issues that we face, a lot of those issues can be traced back to the lack of culture. Mm-hmm. And so as a way of giving back and reconstructing the African-American culture, that's what motivated me to create Karma Art. And while I'm at it, I just want to mention that I'm actually giving away free ebook copies to anyone who's interested in reading the work, Karma Art. And so all they have to do is just send an email request to me at seanxlg@gmail.com. Just send an email request, and I'll send them a free ebook.
So how do you feel Karma Art will benefit the black community?
I think Karma Art will benefit the black community because it fills a void. It allows us to focus in on the cultural aspect of what we're missing as a people. And what Karma Art does is it goes into not just spirituality, but all the different things that interact with spirituality, from health, proper eating, proper sleep, a lot of people drinking water, exercising. So it's actually a lifestyle and a commitment to being spiritual, because being spiritual essentially means just living a conscientious lifestyle and to serve the Creator and do positive works in your life. That's the definition essentially of being spiritual. So Karma Art reinforces that definition by giving examples of it goes through the proper eating habits, how food can benefit us, eliminate some of the medical or health issues that a lot of us face. It goes into sleep. A lot of people don't know that the American Cancer Institute has given a warning that working midnight shifts overnight can actually contribute to breast and prostate cancer in men and women. And a lot of African Americans work night shifts. So I get into a lot of health issues that could be beneficial to African Americans. And I also give an overview of African history, because a lot of us were never taught in school some of the great accomplishments of our ancestors. So I think it's essential that to rebuild the mind, you have to start from the beginning. So I touch on great things on African history, some of the great facts that we were never taught in public school. And so I think that's essential because it helps to build the confidence and helps people build pride within themselves to know that they come from a people that have done great things. So when you get into ancient Egypt, which was originally called Kemet, you get into all the first development of civilization. So we're talking about Africa thousands of years ago. So we're talking about, you know, all the pyramids that were built, the obelisks that were built. We're talking about creating philosophy and being able to teach people from around the world who came to Kemet to learn. So it was the first center of learning in the world. So people traveled from Greece, Rome, from all over the world, from Asia, and they came and they learned in Kemet. So the Africans of Kemet were able to establish the first civilization. And so a lot of us were never taught that in school. So a lot of us don't know that what Ma'at really means. Ma'at was originally created in Kemet during that time period. And it's 42 laws of ethical and moral guidelines. So it's very fascinating and interesting to learn a lot of what incorporates into the spiritual practice of Kama'at. So that's how I think it will benefit our community.
So how does this differ from religion?
It differs from religion because with religion, religion is a set practice. And when you get into religion, you get into specifics in terms of mainly culture. What a lot of people going through my experiences, because I actually went through quite a few experiences in terms of going through religions of Christianity, Islam, studying 5% Nation, and then getting into a lot of the other religions, Jehovah's Witness, and then studying and reading up on everything from Hindu to Shinto to a lot of world religions. And what a lot of people don't realize is that when a person is born in India, 9 times out of 10, they're going to practice Hindu because that's the culture of India. That's a part, that religion is a part of the culture of India. So if people were born in Asia, you're going to find a lot of people who practice Buddhism. When you find people who were born, let's say, in Saudi Arabia, you're going to find a lot of Muslims because the creation of religion comes from a people's culture. So when people who are born primarily in Europe and in the United States, 9 times out of 10, they're going to practice Christianity because it's the religion of the culture. So when you look at spirituality doesn't have any cultural boundaries in terms of geographical regions where people are practicing a certain faith. Spirituality is a conscientious lifestyle that allows people to understand that what you eat is a part of being spiritual. What you drink, how you sleep, what you do, charity, being charitable, and giving back to the community, all of those positive things that a person can do for themselves and for others is being spiritual. So it's more of a lifestyle versus religion teaches a set dogma with mainly with the holy book, and you, whether it's in a church, a mosque, or a synagogue, you're learning a specific teaching from a religion. And spirituality kind of doesn't have those walls of culture surrounding it.
Interesting. Now, we're going to switch the page because this is the last question, and I know that you've had quite a bit experience in promoting your book and promoting others. Do you have any wisdom that you want to share with aspiring authors who are looking to write a book in 2014?
One of the things I would say is write from your heart. Be thorough with your work. thoroughly investigate what it is that you're writing and putting together and presenting to people. And also keep in mind, one of the biggest mistakes that I find with a lot of authors, and I like to share this with them, is that a lot of people write from their personal experience as opposed to writing for the experience of the general population. So a lot of people feel like they need to tell their personal story about what happened to them, but you have to realize that other people have had their own experiences and may not be interested in learning about your personal experience or what happened in your life. So if you don't have a platform like a celebrity would, I would say try to write on topics that has more of a general connection to people so everyone can relate to the work that you're writing.
Great advice, great advice. I know I heard that maybe 6 years ago, and I couldn't understand why somebody wouldn't be interested in my life, you know what I mean, Sean? But, you know, I've gone on this journey for a while now, and I do understand that you've got to make a connection with your reader. Now, I know my listening audience, they're going to want to get this book that you have, but also they may want to contact you, Sean. Can you share with my listening audience how they can do that? What's the best way to get in contact with you?
Email, SeanXLG@gmail.com, SEANXLG@gmail.com. And, again, I'm giving away free copies of Introduction to Kama'at, a new spiritual practice for African Americans and people of African descent. So all they have to do is send an email request. And the book is also available on Amazon. The e-book is available on Amazon. If someone chooses to go and purchase it on Amazon, they can do that. It's under Sean XLG Mitchell. But again, because I'm trying to give back to the community and trying to make a contribution towards improving people's lives and lives of and making positive change in the community. So I'm giving away the ebook for free if they send in a request to my email address.
Excellent, excellent. Now, can you share with us one of your New Year's resolutions?
Wow, I got a lot. One of my New Year's resolutions, I'm actually going to get back into the recording studio with Kool Rock of the Fat Boys, the legendary Fat Boys from back in the day. He and I are planning to introduce a new style of hip-hop, which is called adult contemporary rap. And it's going to be hip-hop geared towards 30 and older crowd. So it's going to be a little bit more mellow, and it's going to have a lot more conscious messages incorporated into the music, a lot of things that an adult can relate to. So we're going to try to create a new style of hip-hop, and we're hoping that will take off and be successful.
Well, Sean, you know, we always love having you on the show, and be looking for another invitation from me for the show in 2014. And you're such a wise man. Do you have any parting wisdom for my guests for 2014?
I would say be true to yourself, stay positive, think positive, and you'll do positive.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
I'm writing
that
down.
Thank you for having me on.
Think positive, and you will do positive. Great words of wisdom. Have a great day.
Thank you. You do the same.
All right, listening audience, my next guest, a plural guest. I get two for the price of one, huh? Oh, I have Dee Weber, Beatrice Dee Pipes, and Charles Weber Yates, Jr. They write under the pen name Wilbur, a combination of their middle name. Dee Wilbur has four published mysteries: A Jealous God, Justice Perverted, A Foolish Plucking, and Ravening Wolves. Both are Texas natives and both graduated from Rice University. Yay! These are Houstonites, sir, close to Houston. Miss Pipes runs and takes names, a company that assists other companies with marketing, project management, and other tasks. She has been married to her husband, Brian, for 35 years. They reside in Houston. Charles Yates is retired after 30 years in the practice of radiology. He has been married to his wife, Sally, for 50 years. Oh, kudos. With four children and eight grandchildren, he tends his garden in Richmond, Texas. Hello, fellow Houstonians.
Well, hello. We're so delighted to be here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I am just so thrilled. You're right down the street. I could throw a rock. A rather long throw. I could throw a rocket at you.
Well, this is not the place, because I live in a glass house, it's not the place to start throwing rocks.
Oh, my goodness, that would be a mess, wouldn't it, Dee? Okay. Now, tell me a little bit about this combination of middle names, and how did you two meet?
Well, I'll let Charlie answer the part about how we met.
Sally and I, my wife, both graduated from Rice, and me and her husband, Brian, both graduated from Rice, and we attended Rice basketball games for about 15 or 20 years, and by the luck of the draw, our season tickets were adjacent to one another, so over those 20 years of long suffering, we became good friends. And we would go out together even during the off season. So that's how we met.
And
we'll
come back to how we got started writing, but when we had a pretty solid draft of the first book, A Jealous God, we started looking for a pen name. And I really wanted a pen name because I wanted a lot more anonymity than it turned out that we got. So Charlie went and researched, because when we wrote A Jealous God, the primary methods of selling it were physical books. So Charlie went to several bookstores and looked in the mystery sections about what areas had more space. And it turned out that the W's were relatively unpopulated. They certainly weren't overpopulated. And so we came up with the combination, because Beatrice Charles sounds like some sort of jazz or torch singer from the last millennium, and neither one of us can sing, and we certainly can't sing well.
The name Yates Pipes sounded like either a pawning store or a tobacconist. So that wouldn't work.
Oh, wow.
And I was open, since Charlie goes by Charlie, or some other nicknames, but he doesn't go by Wilbur, it gave him relatively good anonymity. I go by D, and so it gave me none of the anonymity that I was looking for, and that's really been how our partnership has worked out.
Wow, I tell you, I like it, I like it. So when was it that you both discovered that you have a passion for writing?
I think that I want to give Sean some credit. His interview was very serious, and I think that he was what he was talking about. It was spiritual. Charlie and I write books to have fun. We have fun writing books. We have fun thinking up things for people to do, and we enjoy entertaining and giving people a break from everyday life or their regular life where they've got lots of kind of heavy things. We discovered that we have a passion for our characters. I think we realized the depth of passion that we and, surprisingly, our readers had for some of the characters after the first book, because a couple of characters, Daphne in particular, were characters that were going to appear in the first book, but they were secondary characters that supported moving the action on. But people kept saying, oh, so what happens to Daphne? If Emma, you know, kind of drops out, loses her position, what happens to Daphne? We're like, really? Daphne's who you're worried about? You're not worried about John? And some people were. But that's kind of how our passion grew. I guess it's a reflection of our community of readers.
We had one character.
Now, is there any way that Charles can turn his phone up just a little bit? Because he kind of fades away in the background. But I want him to know we got to hear his voice.
We'll just speak louder.
Charlie, you have a lot to say. Let me ask this question, Dee. I'm a bit curious. Had you all been writing for years independently before you started on this joint venture?
Not in fiction. So, Charlie, why don't you talk a little bit about some of the writing you did?
My writing was all scientific in nature, probably 20 or so scientific articles in peer-reviewed journals and a couple of chapters in scientific books. So no fiction, clearly fact.
I had been writing on a series set in coastal Mississippi that I was really simply puttering with. And after our second book, after Justice Perverted, Charlie was really getting ahead of me. And so I said, oh, Charlie, this book is really almost finished. Why don't you read it and give me some comments? And he discovered why I need him so desperately, because it actually had no plot.
I see. So tell me about some of the testimonials that your readers have shared with you about the books that you've written.
Well, Charlie, why don't you tell them about the death threats we got?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness, death threats. Okay.
Our third book ended as a cliffhanger, and we were having some difficulty with our publisher getting the fourth book out, and we were getting really irate calls from people, what is happening to these characters? We're desperate to know. And so as a consequence, because our publisher was dilly-dallying around, we actually went and self-published the fourth one just to avoid getting shot at.
You know, because we live in Houston, and getting shot at's not outside of the realm of possibilities.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. You can go out on the street any given day and see somebody in a pickup truck with their rifle right up. You are absolutely correct. Yes, we do live in a town where you can carry a weapon around if you need to. So I was a little worried for the Texans there for a while, but we're not going to go on that tangent. We're not going to go there. Now, tell us about some lessons that you've learned from your writing experience, and kudos to you all forming a partnership and making it happen.
Well, thank you. One of the lessons I've learned is that writing is an exercise. And even though we say one practices medicine, one practices writing. It's like having an exercise program or any other endeavor. I don't want to say discipline because I'm not sure that I can even aspire to that. And so it's very helpful for me to work with Charlie. I am also a member of a writing group. We're all writing very different things, but that's helpful to have a group that you can make a mistake or lots of mistakes in front of. And Charlie and I are, you know, riding along, struggling along in sometimes the same direction, and we always learn something when we're going in different directions.
So what would be your word of advice for an aspiring author who would be interested in writing a book in 2014?
Well, Charlie, I'm going to take this one too. It's the Nike commercial. Just do it. Everyone writes a bad first draft. All first drafts are awful. So do that one and get over it. Just do it.
I love it. I love it. I love them. Dee, we have a lot in common. Charlie, what is your advice?
My advice is to listen to Dee and do what she says.
Yes. Yes. And now I haven't recorded that he said that.
Is that true?
It's true that he said it. It's not true that he does it. But we're working on things.
That is so funny. So are there any new projects on the horizon?
Yes, the book that I gave Charlie that was so close to finished that he said, you know, lacked the plot, has turned into a trilogy set in coastal Mississippi. And we've got the first two relatively finished, and the third one is beyond the crappy first draft. We also have, Charlie, you want to tell them about the two in the Richmond series?
We also have two complete novels in the Richmond series, continuation of the four we've written before that are in their final stages, plus a novella also set in Richmond, which is in its final stages. So there's a lot more coming down the pike.
Wow, wow. Well, I'm excited. I'll have to get me a copy of some of these books that you all have done, and
you
use it as therapy.
Okay, well, exactly. And Sharon,
I'll be laughing a lot in the process there because you guys are a hoot, as they say. Share with my listening audience how to contact you?
Yes.
Or where
we
to get
have. We both have a Facebook page, and that's probably the best place to start to do a private message. All four of the books are available on Amazon as Kindle books, and Sharon, they are so inexpensive as Kindle books that they're not going to do any harm to your 2014 budget, and you'll just laugh your way through it. We have a web page. That's D. Wilbur, and Wilbur's with WILBUR.com, and you can contact us through that.
Very good, very good. Now, our parting question will be this. Can you and Charlie tell us what is a New Year's resolution that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, Charlie, you already said yours, didn't you? Just do what Dee says?
That's fine. For years.
And mine is to finish something, to finish things and then move on to something else.
Very good, very good. Well, I appreciate you all being on the show, and will most likely extend an invitation for 2014. I hope you're available. Be a little bit longer than 15 minutes. We're moving the format up to 30 minutes. And I know you guys, I tell you, you'll have me laughing the whole time, and I love to laugh.
Okay, and Sharon,
comments?
Sharon, if you have an event here in the Houston area, just email us and we'll come on down.
Oh, that is so good. I can tell you right now, we're looking at doing some webinars. And
oh,
some
great.
And you guys would be hilarious. So get ready because I'm going to be calling you. And
okay.
Thank you for being on the show today, and Happy New Year to both of you all.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, Dee.
Okay.
Have a great one. Now, listening audience, what we're going to do is have a brief station break, and then we're going to come back with our third author for today, Dr. Peterson. So go get you another cup of coffee, and we'll be back in a few seconds.
Welcome to Color Nail Bar, where happy hour begins when you walk in. We're not your average nail shop, so come on in, kick your shoes off, and enjoy happy hour with friends at Color Nail Bar. Want happy hands and feet? Enjoy a rejuvenating service that leaves your skin oh so soft. Are you diabetic and need a safe, sanitary nail salon? The nail professionals at Color Nail Bar are trained in diabetic foot care. Schedule your happy hour online at colornailbar.com or call 281-288-5550. Happy hour begins when you walk in at Color Nail Bar, located on the northwest corner of I-45 and Louetta.
Well, listening audience, we are back. I have my cup of tea beside me, and we're gonna interview two fabulous authors. I just love authors. And this particular lady is on a mission. Dr. Joy S. Peterson, how are you?
Well, thank you.
Oh, very good, very good. She is the founder of Express Success, LLC. She is a licensed spiritual healer, certified spiritual health coach, certified law of attraction practitioner, a non-denominational ordained minister and doctor of divinity, has a doctor of divinity serving an international clientele. She works closely with individuals and businesses to overcome their challenges with money, relationships, career, business, health, and well-being. Her work includes clearing negative memories, property, and karma. She is the author of Wisdom of the Guardian Treasures from Archangel Michael to Change Your Life. And she has a blog at www.angelenlightenment.com and was a contributing author to Big Bold Business. Welcome, Joy. How are you this morning? I think I asked that question. How's the weather? Where you are this morning is a better question.
It's cold.
Oh, where are
it
you?
It is cold. I'm actually in New Jersey, but I moved this past fall to Florida, so it's a bit warmer where I now live.
It is warmer there, huh? Oh, wow. So talk to us a little bit about what you do, Dr. Peterson.
My focus in my work is to help identify as a intuitive the cause of people's challenges, whether they're in this life or other lifetimes. And I work with Archangel Michael specifically, as well as other angels and ascended masters, in helping people heal the cause of their challenges and release the negative programming, memories, emotions that hold people back and cause blocks to their experiencing life as they would prefer. And the work can affect someone in their business, their personal lives. It's quite comprehensive because if you have a negative memory or a limiting belief, it will often cover all areas of life. And when you release that negative memory, you can free your own abilities to express yourself more wholly and completely and succeed more quickly at whatever you endeavor.
Mm. So can you explain channeling and how this came to be? This book is channeled?
Yes, and channeling is when you let go of your intellectual mind and allow someone else, a multidimensional being, come through and communicate. So in this case, Archangel Michael came to me years ago and asked me to write his book, and I said, how many chapters? He said 22, and I said, okay, having no idea what this was going to be and how this was going to change the direction of my life. But apparently I was created to do this work, and this was long planned, and it's been quite an extraordinary journey. But the ability to be able to receive information from heavenly bodies is quite useful to understand a larger dynamic than we're able to understand on our own limited perspective, relying on our intellect, which is also relying on our past. And by being able to access sort of the all that is, you have a bigger perspective. And speaking to Archangel Michael, he sees the bigger perspective and is very useful in being able to impart information that we don't understand on a personal level.
Hmm. So what is the purpose of Archangel Michael wanting to have this book written?
He wanted to help people because the angels, all God and the angels, all hear our prayers almost immediately. But what happens is people don't understand how to receive the answer to their prayers. They often block the answers to their prayers. So the book is about empowering people to understand how to make change themselves, as well as listen to the guidance that is available to them. So when an angel tries to come forward and assist someone, they have the ability to then receive that communication and assistance.
Mm. So what is the most important thing someone will get out of reading this book?
I really think it's about learning that they're responsible for their life, and it's not that they're guilty at causing something to be wrong or bad or negative, but that they have the power to make changes themselves, and it's giving a perspective on how to look at life and make very valuable change so they can create the life they deserve. Often people are feeling more like victims of circumstance, and it's a way of overcoming that perspective and empowering people to be able to make that valuable change they seek.
Mm. So what was your biggest challenge in getting this book published?
The problem was I could channel easily, the information flowed, but then when I wanted to go out in the world and tell people I channel angels or I have this information, I was concerned about what people would think. I came out of the business community and was very concerned about my reputation and how you're perceived in the community. And what I was able to identify was these were limiting beliefs that I had based on past lives of persecution. If you look back in history, many people were persecuted for a variety of reasons, but basically because that person didn't fit that other individual's pictures. So I had to take myself on as a client, clear my own path of persecution, and then I was able to go out and share this work.
Hmm, interesting. So how does the Archangel Michael work with you in your practice?
He helps me identify limiting beliefs. He also provides protection when we open this channeled session and gives insights. Sometimes he shares messages for clients about what the cause of their problem is, how to make a change. But he's an integral part of this practice in helping clear people's karma, the cause and effect of their challenges. And when we do this work, it's so comprehensive because it is multidimensional. It covers past lives. It covers ancestral programming. So it's so far-reaching, his perspective and his gift as the protector and one of the lords of karma. It's very comprehensive when we do this work. So it's not just me doing it. I have someone very powerful as part of that picture.
Interesting. So can you tell me a little bit about your journey in writing this book from a writer's perspective? What were some of the challenges and things that you experienced as a beginning writer, or were you a beginning writer when you started this journey?
I have been channeling information since 1994. So from that standpoint, it was effortless. The information just flows. The difference is meeting the expectations of others if they have a preconceived notion that if this is what an archangel is saying, does it fit their pictures? And he's very succinct in his messages, so the writing may not flow as quickly and flowery maybe as someone else might write, and I wanted to keep it as true to how it came through to me. So I wanted to have it more, I guess, pure in nature. So it may not always fit, a literary editor perspective, but it's really pure, because when you channel an angel, for example, and you're having their information come through, it's also a vibration that comes through. So actually, when someone reads the book, and this is I learned actually from a lot of the readers, they would come back and they would say they felt Archangel Michael with them. So I asked Michael afterwards, I said, were you with him? And he said, everyone that reads the book, I'm present with them at the time they're reading the book. So it's a little different than maybe the average, not really an angel behind it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just really the conduit.
So can you talk to us a little bit about your advice for beginning writers?
As Sean said earlier, come from the heart. And I think also, if you want to be a writer in general, being a reader is useful because then you really understand the written word. But when you come from the heart, you also, in some regards, I think, can channel information that's not just based on the intellect. And practice and keep writing on a regular basis, I think, helps the flow.
So would you like to share briefly with us one of your New Year's resolutions?
Right now, I work on a one-on-one basis with people, and I want to serve more people. So my major goal is to put together programs to reach more of the masses so we can help heal more people quicker and easier. So that's a big undertaking unto itself. So that's really my main focus.
Okay. So if our listening audience would like to contact you or get a copy of your book, how could they best do that?
There's a website for the book, wisdomoftheguardian.com. It's also available in all formats on Amazon. And to contact me, ExpressSuccess.net is my website, and I also offer a free Get Acquainted call through that website in the Schedule Now button. So if someone wants to discuss their particular needs, I'm open to sharing some time to do that with the individual.
Okay. All right, then. Well, we wish you a happy new year, and are there any parting words of wisdom that you want to share with our listening audience?
I would say trust your instincts. I think often we have been programmed to look outside of ourselves and follow what others have been guiding us to do. And I think when people learn to go within and trust their own instincts and preferences and be true to themselves, they will have an easier time at being in the right place at the right time when they learn to do that. And I thank you for your good wishes for the new year, and I wish you the same.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Peterson. We appreciate you, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
Well, listening audience, we have a final guest, and I am so excited that she has decided to join us. We have Tara Jackson on the line. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. We saved the best for last.
Why, thank you.
Oh, I just want to say I appreciate you coming on the show today. And listening audience, she is an internationally celebrated author as well as an empowerment and inspirational speaker in the field of personal finance. She is unique in the field of finance in a way that defies normal labels. She is not a modern-day financial advisor or educator. Instead, she is an experienced personal financial coach, author, and speaker who helps individuals and organizations improve or fix their financial relationships. Tara is the author of Financial Fornication: Avoid Financial and Credit Dis-Ease. She is part of the expert panel for financial contributors for numerous blogs and has appeared in numerous radio and magazine articles. Tara is also a frequent speaker on economic empowerment and inspirational, as well as credit union management topics at conferences, workshops, events, and trade associations. Tara, we welcome you to the Literary Showcase. How are
you?
What's happening in your part of the world?
Oh, it's cold. As one of those, it's cold, but it's a beautiful day. Every day is a beautiful day. So, thank you, sir.
Yes, because it's a gift.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so, interesting title, Financial Fornication. What is this about?
Well, Financial Fornication, it came to me a few years ago. How I actually started was I share financial tips, and I was sharing different tidbits and, you know, talking about certain things. And my sister saw me speak at an event for the first time ever, and she said, "Girl, you need to write a book." And I said, "Yeah, I would love to, but I don't know how." And then another good friend of mine who was on the same panel that we were speaking, her name was Bonnie, and she said, "Oh, you can do it. I've written several, and you can self-publish." And she walked me through the process and told me what to do. And I made up my mind that day that I was going to write this book. And what I wanted to do, or the purpose of writing Financial Fornication, one, I wanted to give people a little shocker, but I wanted to create a book that helped people to be able to understand finances in a fun and less intimidating way. And so I knew that people understood relationships, they talk about relationships, and all you see on TV, I tell people all the time that, you know, all these TV shows, which is just ridiculous, they'll talk about who they slept with, who they want to sleep with, but nobody wants to talk about their crappy credit. And so I figured, well, why not talk about both? So I just intertwine what we understand about finance, personal and physical relationships to how we deal with money, credit, and financial institutions. And so, you know, I did some research, and, you know, I saw that a lot of people, or in my research when I talked to several people, they were being very financially promiscuous with using credit. And so they weren't just using one credit card. They were using multiple credit cards. So they were financially promiscuous with using their credit cards. And so they would do these financial one-night stands, and that's purchasing small items or, you know, items that should be purchased with cash, but they're using it with credit. And they're not only taking that short-term financial relationship and making it short-term, they were turning that into a long-term financial relationship by not paying it off in full. They were paying small payments. And so that helped them or got them in a situation where they ended up with financial STDs, which is substantially tremendous debt. And so, of course, when that happened, they would come to me, their financial practitioner or their financial doctor, to find cures. And so some cures are as easy as budgeting, and some cures are as major surgery like bankruptcy. But every case was different. And so I wanted to be able to put that type of scenarios and those type of analogies in the books because people get that. And, you know, and all you're getting, get understanding. And I just needed people to understand. And I tell people all the time that, you know, there's some things that you may not like about your situation and you may not like about financial institutions. You may not think it's fair. And you don't really have to like it. You just have to understand it. And that's been my passion, to help people to understand. Because I come from the financial services industry and I come from a financial institution, so I'm able to help people understand how financial institutions think and why they do some of the things that they do. And sometimes it's not just to make money. Sometimes it's to comply with federal regulations. Sometimes it's to protect the consumer. Sometimes it's behavior modification, so consumers won't do certain things. So, you know, if a financial institution has lots of fees, they're probably behavior modification fees, and they're designed that if you don't like the fee, balance your checkbook so you won't get an NSF fee. If you don't like the fee, then don't overdraft and get an overdraft fee. So there are some other fees that financial institutions have, but that is to get revenue so they can protect themselves and get, you know, all their expenses because of the new federal regulations, and they had to incorporate some new technologies, and that costs money. And then there's some financial institutions that want to be able to maintain their salary, you know, on the top level, and they want to maintain their financial solvency and stability so they don't have to lay off employees until they incorporate new fees to generate revenue. And so those are some of the things that I talk about. I also talk about how to restore your credit or how to repair your credit for free. I talk about, you know, spending plans and savings plans. And I just want people to have fun when talking about finances. Finances should not be a dreadful thing, and that's what it's become, especially in this economy. So just finding a fun way to talk about finances so it's less intimidating and so we can actually help it to grow and be a tool for us to leverage to live the life of our dreams. And that's just really my passion and the purpose of financial fornication. Other than that, the title was just to shock people.
It shocked me. Okay, all right, I think I love your premise. I love what's happening with the book, and I love the energy behind it. Now, tell us a little bit about the Financial Lifestyle Transformation Program.
I am so excited about that program. It's actually a 7-week virtual coaching, educational, and counseling success system that I designed to help participants, and I call it the Fab 14. I only have room for 14 individuals. Well, now it's 12 because I have two people signed up. But I wanted to make it small enough so I can give people the individual attention that they need. But it's really designed to help them develop and reach their financial lifestyle goals and to help transform their financial situation into the life of their dreams, because there's a lot of people that are suffering right now and they're wandering. I tell people all the time that not having financial goals or having a plan is like going on vacation without a destination. And so if you go on a vacation without a destination, you're going to wander. You're going to get lost. You're going to waste a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of gas, and so forth, because you don't have a set destination. And so what this financial lifestyle transformation program is to create that financial destination for the participants, so that we can create their financial GPS, or they can have their financial GPS, which is a goal planning system. So I'm really excited about the 7-week transformation program. It's going to be weekly emails with tactical tips, templates, and assignments to help them through the program and each lesson that they have to do. So it's little small assignments to guide them through the transformation. They're going to have free access to the educational sessions. And it's not just educational sessions, but it's with subject matter experts in those fields. And all of them are going to be my prosperity partners. So I've either worked with them, done business with them, or, you know, we've done some type of interaction. And so I'm very protective of my clients, and so I don't just refer them to anyone. So the people that I bring as subject matter experts, I really trust them to take care of my clients. They're also going to receive a virtual group coaching session. A lot of people say, well, I don't want to tell my business, and that's not what the purpose of the virtual group coaching session is. It's really to share, you know, there's some people that have been through some things that I haven't been through, or they've been through some things that other people haven't been through, and they can share some insights on some helpful tips on how to get through certain things. Or, you know, when we have those training sessions or educational sessions, this is a great opportunity to start asking additional questions and getting some more clarification. And so I give them an opportunity to delve a little bit more into what they learned that week. And then most importantly, they're going to get individual accountability coaching sessions with me. And so I don't have a lot of time. That's why I said I only have room for 14 people, because I want to give them the individual accountability coaching that each of them need to reach their own customized or individualized financial goals. And so I'm just excited to be able to do this. It starts February 3rd. I'm actually kicking it off on January 9th, where I'm doing an informational call for more information about the program, the mechanics of the program, how people can invest in themselves and get involved with the program and become one of the Fab 14. And so, you know, if your listeners want to hear more about it, they can actually register to get on. It's a free educational call, and they can go to the website of breakthrough2014.eventbrite.com. And so this is the first time I've done this. I'm going to try to do it again sometime this year, but I had an open window of time, and I've gotten so many requests to do something like this, and I said, okay, well, 2014, I'm finally going to do it. So I am so, so excited about helping people transform their financial lifestyles for 2014.
So is there a cost? What is the cost to the program, or do they need to contact you to get more information?
Absolutely. There is an investment, and all that information is going to be shared on the informational call on January 9th. And so for those that want to hear more about it, I am offering a special discount to the listeners of that call, and only to the listeners of that call. So, again, that is breakthrough2014.eventbrite.com. So, to learn more about that, just get on the call on January 9th, and I'll be answering any questions that people have. And the great thing about the program is that it has 100% money-back guarantee. So that's how confident I am in the program. But, you know, people need that security, and I understand, especially, with, you know, dealing with finances, you need to have that security. So I am excited about being able to provide the service, but there is 100% money-back guarantee with that as well.
So tell me a little bit about your experience. I'm assuming that Financial Fornication is your first book.
It is. It's actually my first book. I'm writing my second book now.
Okay.
And
so tell us a little bit about lessons learned from this first book.
The lessons learned, actually, I'm actually going to be sharing a lot of my lessons learned in my second book. And the second book is called Confessions of a Financial Fornicator. And so it's like a part two of Financial Fornication. What I learned was I was actually a financial fornicator, and that financial fornication is all about a spending addiction. It's a spending addiction. And it's just as serious as a drug addiction, alcohol addiction, a sex addiction. It is very serious. And I didn't realize how serious it was until I actually, you know, watched myself and observed some of my behaviors. And, you know, one of the things I realized, you know, you might be a financial fornicator if you have this desire to spend money just because. You know, you feel sick, you feel happy, you're bored or whatever, you want to go out and spend money on something, whether it's food, whether it's alcohol, whether it's clothing, whether it's electronics, whatever event in your life, you want to spend money. And what I realized is that when I didn't spend money, I was depressed. When I did spend money, regardless of what it was on, my endorphins just went off. It was a pleasure principle for me. And that was scary for me to understand, because if that addiction gets overwhelming, it can cause lots of problems. And I'm seeing that type of addiction, that spending addiction, causing people lots of problems in their lifestyles. And it's some of the things that they want to do right. They want to have a spending plan. They want to budget. They want to do certain things. But they can't seem to understand why they can't stop spending money the way they do. And so I wanted to share some of my challenges of the spending addiction, of being a financial fornicator, of ideas, you know, or tips on if you may be a financial fornicator if. But I also wanted to share some cures and some ways to manage the addiction. And I tell people all the time, you know, if you're a financial fornicator, once a financial fornicator, always a financial fornicator. You just know how to manage your spending now, and you have to pay more attention to managing your spending than maybe someone else. And so I'm excited about that. One of the chapters that I'm struggling with, so I ask everyone to keep me in prayer, is when suicide was an option.
Mm.
And so that was an option for me. It wasn't a good option. Of course, I didn't take it, but I need people to understand that sometimes you do get there where it does look hopeless. There's no way out. There's no money. You can't, you know, pay your rent. You can't do certain things, and you just don't know what else to do. And I just need people to understand that they're not the only ones feeling that way. And some steps to take when they are feeling that way. Because that was a big challenge for me. I'm still emotional talking about it. I'm still emotional having to write about it and recreate it. But I think there is going to be a blessing in that lesson that I've learned through that. And my goal, again, is just to help people to get through this, especially in this economy. You know, the government is even having financial problems. So, you know, individuals are just a remnant of what the government is going through and how to manage through this challenging economic time and finding empowerment through this time. So, you know, there is ways to do it. I tell people all the time to, the number one thing is to ask for help. And I have this 10-step recovery program. So, you know, the Alcohol Anonymous has a 12-step program. Well, the Financial Recovery has a 10-step program. And so I take people through a 10-step financial recovery program. And the first one is to admit that you have a problem. And that's with everyone. So the first thing I had to do was I had to admit that I had a spending problem and that my finances were out of control. And it wasn't because I didn't know what to do. I made money on teaching people how to do it the right way, and I'm very successful at it. And so that was one of my challenges, was for me, a financial expert and financial coach, to admit that I had a spending problem. Mm. And that was downright embarrassing. And so I had to be able to do that, and I had to figure out where that came from. Where did the spending addiction come from? And it actually came from what I observed when I was younger. And I ended up modeling the behaviors of, you know, what I saw. And what we did every time there was something good, bad, or whatever happened, we spent money. And if we didn't have the money, we borrowed money to spend the money. And I just took that when I got older. And it just expanded. And so, those are the steps that I help people through that have been very successful for me and very successful for my clients. And once they go through that 10-step financial recovery program, then they're able to start taking some immediate actions to fix their situation. So stay tuned for that. It should be coming out.
Well, I want to congratulate you on stepping up to the plate and addressing an issue that is universal and crosses all cultural lines, crosses all socioeconomical lines, and that is how to progressively deal with your finances. So kudos to you.
Why, thank you so much. I'm honored that God decided to use me as a vessel for that. I really am.
So we have come to the end of our program, but I want to give you the opportunity to tell people how they can get a copy of your book, and please share one of your New Year's resolutions with us.
Oh, great. Everyone can get a copy of my book on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And the most easiest way to get a copy of my book is to go on my website, and then you can connect with me as well. So I look forward to being a wealth empowerment or economic empowerment speaker at anyone's events or a workshop facilitator. And you can connect with me at www.tarajackson.com. That's TARRAJackson.com. Or if you can remember, they call me Madam Money, and you can reach me at www.madammoney, MADAMMONEY.com. And so you can connect with me to all of my social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, if you go to my website. So I look forward to connecting with everyone. And as far as my New Year's resolutions, is to be able to have a Wonder Woman Wealth Weekend workshop for the women to come out, to be able to get empowered, not only financially, but physically, emotionally, and spiritually, because that's a part of prosperity. Prosperity is not just financial. Prosperity is everything, your whole body, your whole being, your whole spiritual, your spirit, and so forth. And so I'm looking forward to connecting with more Wonder Women, when people wonder how these women do it all, and helping them to become better and stronger. So that is my New Year's revelation. I call it a revelation, not a revolution, but my revelation is to be able to be a conduit of empowerment for women and for everybody.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Tara, for being on the show. We appreciate you and appreciate what you do. And listening audience, we want to say thank you for listening all of 2013. We've done our best to bring a variety of guests, authors from all genres, authors who just had the courage to pick up the pen and to put their thoughts on paper and share their educational expertise, life stories with you, and their imagination. So I just want to say thank you to all of my guests from 2013. I sincerely wish you a happy new year and happy writing in the process. And I personally want to extend an invitation for us to continue to stay connected. One of the reasons why I do a variety of types of guests on the show is simply because we need to network better. And this is a prime opportunity for authors not only to be introduced to other authors, but people on the show get to hear and to know each other. So that's a wonderful thing. And if we've done no more in 2013 to set up new connections and to spread the wisdom of how to do writing right, we have accomplished our goal for 2013. Now, let me take 2 seconds and share with you our goal, the Literary Showcase for 2014, and what we will do, not think about, but what we will do in 2014 is put together a group for people after the show is over with. They can come to that Facebook group. It's called the Literary Showcase Hangout. We put together a group, and you can go and sign up today. It's a closed group for authors only, and we put that group together so that you could reach out and touch our guests and ask them questions, have a further conversation with them about what they've written, and to give you an opportunity to reach out and touch them personally. So what I would like to do is just share with you, we're really serious about authors networking with each other, and we just found a virtual way of making it happen. So be looking in 2014 for that announcement, and you can actually go and join the Facebook group now. We'd invite you to do that if you are an author. So, again, thank you for your support. Again, to my guest today, you were fabtabulous, every one of you, and we appreciate you and wish you the happiest new year possible. We will be back, listening audience, next Saturday, same time, same place with the Literary Showcase, and the Master Communicator is signing off. Have a happy and a safe and prosperous new year. Bye-bye.